Professor Carlo Cattasi, welcome to El Microscopio.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Our first question is, you have described celiac disease as an iceberg due to the undiagnosed cases. In 2013, how would you describe that iceberg?
The iceberg, we described it at the beginning of the new era of the epidemiology of celiac disease, when we started performing serological screening studies in children and also in adults, because we found that the number of patients who is affected with celiac disease is much higher than the number of patients who receive a diagnosis of celiac disease. For example, the situation was that for each case that is diagnosed with celiac disease, there are at least 8 to 10 patients who are celiac and who don't know to be celiac because they didn't receive the diagnosis. This situation has changed a little bit because now there is increased awareness of celiac disease among doctors and also in the general population. So the number of patients who receive a diagnosis of celiac disease has increased. But I had to tell you that the iceberg is still there because recent epidemiological studies suggest that no more than 20%, maybe maximum 30% cases of celiac disease are diagnosed. The other is the submerged part of the celiac iceberg because they are not seen and they are there. And you know that there can be a problem with these patients. So the iceberg is still visible and the submerged part of the iceberg is still very big, both in developed and also in developing countries.
And what are the global perspectives of celiac disease?
Yes, is that the recent studies have found that celiac disease is present everywhere in the world, almost, because we have data to suggest that celiac disease is very common in Europe, in North and South America, in North Africa, in Middle East, and even in India and in China, probably. Only in very limited parts of the world, we think that there are few cases of celiac disease, for example, in sub-Saharan Africa or in Far East countries, due to a low consumption of gluten. But in most parts of the world, the situation is the same. Celiac disease is very common, and we calculate that the current prevalence of celiac disease in most of the areas is about 1%. And it is important to know that this prevalence is increasing over time. And we know that, for example, now in some countries of Northern Europe, for example, in Sweden, and in Finland, the prevalence is as high as 2% in the general population because it is still increasing. But the disorder is common all around the world.
And why do you think that the prevalence is increasing? Is there a reason for that?
Yeah, we for sure can say that the genetics has not changed during these last decades. The genetic structure of the American, of the European population has not changed during the last 30 to 40 years. Therefore, we are interested in possible environmental factors that can be responsible for this increase. For example, the amount of gluten that is consumed and the quality of gluten can make the difference. The pattern of infant nutrition can be important. The duration of breastfeeding, for example, in infant can be important. Age at gluten introduction can be important. The intestinal microbiome is also a potential factor leading to the development of celiac disease. So currently we are evaluating and studying all these different possibilities, but we are pretty sure that the reason of the increase is in the environment and not in the genetics that has not changed.
So when should gluten be introduced in infants' diet? What's your opinion about that?
For sure, we know that the longer is the duration of breastfeeding and the more protection against celiac disease we can have. Another thing that can be important is the fact that the child is introduced to gluten when it is still breastfed. Introducing a small amount of gluten when the baby is still breastfed seems to be protective against the development of celiac disease. We are also currently performing an investigation here in Italy and in the United States as well to understand whether the age at gluten introduction can make the difference. So far, I still don't know the final results of this prospective study where we are evaluating the risk of celiac disease in babies who introduce gluten at either 6 or 12 months. But we still do not have the final result of the study. Maybe in the next interview with you, I can tell you something in the next years.
Could we prevent celiac disease?
We can do something because, you know, as I said, prolonged breastfeeding is primary prevention of celiac disease. Another thing that we should take into consideration is that there can be a difference in the prevalence of celiac disease according to the pattern of delivery, because children who are naturally delivered have a lower risk of celiac disease in comparison with cesarean cut, which can be a risk factor for celiac disease. Another thing that could be important, but we still do not have the evidence, is the role of rotavirus infection, because it seems that rotavirus infection can be a risk factor for celiac disease. Therefore, it is well possible that the vaccination against rotavirus can be preventive of celiac disease. But still, we do not have final evidence to suggest this vaccination, but I think it's well possible.
What are the current difficulties in the diagnosis of celiac disease?
The difficulties can be overcome by the wider application of the serological test for celiac disease, because nowadays we have very powerful tests for the diagnosis of celiac disease. I am alluding to anti-endomysial antibody test, anti-transglutaminase IgA class, and anti-deamidated gliadin peptide of IgG class. These are very powerful tests. Therefore, the first message that is very important to tell to the general audience and to the doctors is that we must perform the serological test for celiac disease in every patient who shows minimal complaints or possible signs of celiac disease. Be aware of the enormous variability of the clinical presentation and therefore perform serological tests whenever is possible. Then the diagnosis can be done with the serological test and usually also with the small intestinal biopsy, which is considered the gold standard for diagnosis. Even though, for example, in Europe, in children, there are new guidelines about the diagnosis of celiac disease, and when there are typical signs of celiac disease in a very young baby, together with predisposing genotypes, HLA, DQ2 or DQ8, and very positive tests, as anti-transglutaminase test and anti-endomysial test, we do not perform the biopsy anymore in these cases. But when there are doubts or when the presentation is not typical, we still perform the small intestinal biopsy. There can be difficulties with the diagnosis of celiac disease sometimes when the level of the antibodies is not very high. In such situation, it is better sometimes to repeat the test wait some time because there can be a fluctuating level of antibody, and we must be careful in the interpretation of these results. But this happens really in a minority of cases.
What's your opinion about the new criteria in the diagnosis in children and teenagers and adolescents?
I have to tell you that I was a member of the committee that published these new EFGAN guidelines. So I am strongly in favor of these new guidelines. We have been using these new guidelines during these last years in Europe and in my center in particular. And I have to tell you that they really work well because with these new guidelines, we can spare at least 40% of biopsy. And this is a very good news for children because, you know, parents do not like the small intestinal biopsy very much because it's some way an invasive procedure. And of course, we can spare the small intestinal biopsy when the evidence is very clear, when there is a typical clinical picture of celiac disease, when there is a very high level of antibodies, has the TTG and the EMA, and the genetic test for celiac disease is positive. But in these cases, the application of these new rules works very, very well.
Our last question is about your opinion of how much gluten can cause mucosal damage.
Oh, yeah, this is a very important issue, as you know, because there has always been the problem of the possible gluten contamination of food that you can buy in the supermarket or everywhere, because gluten contamination is quite common. We performed some studies years ago showing that the sensitivity of the celiac patient to gluten is quite high, and therefore as low as, for example, 50 milligrams of gluten per day can induce a small intestinal damage in the patient affected with celiac disease. Therefore, we concluded that gluten-free food should not contain more than 20 ppm, which means 20 milligram per kilo of gluten, to be a safe product for the patient affected with celiac disease. This proposal has been endorsed by the Codex Alimentarius, who is an international committee that rules the trade all over the world. And also recently the FDA in the United States accepted this rule. And therefore, we can say that all over the world, gluten-free food should never contain more than 20 ppm of gluten, because we know that this tiny amount of gluten does not induce any damage, even though the patient is eating a lot of gluten-free products. And therefore, this rule of the 20 ppm, I think, is very valid in Europe, in North and South America, and all over the world.
Is there any final comment you would like to make?
For your country, I know that the research on celiac disease is very powerful and strong in Argentina, as well as the association of patients affected with celiac disease. The awareness of celiac disease is quite high. Therefore, in your country, as well as in Italy or in other European or in North American countries, we do not have big problems currently with the diagnosis and treatment of celiac disease. But I think that the problem of celiac disease in the next future will be, the new frontier will be in other countries, in developing countries, for example, in North Africa or in India, Please consider that in India, the iceberg of celiac disease is entirely submerged because only a few hundreds of patients have been diagnosed so far, and they calculate that there are at least something like 10 million patients affected with celiac disease in that country. But they still do not have awareness of this condition, they do not have diagnostic tools, and they do not have facilities for treatment of celiac disease. Therefore, I think in the next future, the approach to celiac disease should be focused particularly in developing countries where we know that celiac disease is very common.
Thank you very much. It has been a real honor and a pleasure to have this interview with you. We admire you a lot from here.
Thank you. Have a good day. Buenas tardes.